see the fun. I see the fun. The Diary of Jack Kirkman.
I Seem Fun, the Diary of Jen Kirkman podcast, episode 221. Oh my God, I don't have time to record this. My life is, I know many would think my life is great, and it is. I've got to get into gratitude because I am stressed out and I have this, things didn't work out the way I wanted. Plan B, everybody. Plan B. Let me explain. Let me get into some business. Impromptu decision, because I'll be living in New York now. March 2nd, Friday night, a live I Seem Fun taping at the Bell House in Brooklyn. This is my third I Seem Fun taping in the Cité of Brooklyn. Did one at the Bell House, one at the Union Hall, now back at the Bell House. I don't know why I didn't pick Union Hall this time. I've been coming to New York a lot. I hope I'm not overestimating your goodwill. That's a large place. We've got 300 people. We'd like to sell that out. We meaning me. So I believe the Bell House is going to announce it Wednesday. So if you're listening to this Wednesday, I think it's being announced. So get tickets. I don't know if it'll be up on my website by Wednesday, but you can go to the Bell House's website. How does that sound? I almost just choked on coffee. Savvy Brooklyn people. You know how to get tickets to things before it's up on my website. Come on now. Send an email to the podcast, iseemfun@gmail.com. Follow us at iseemfun. Why do I keep saying us? At iseemfunpodcast on Twitter. Facebook.com/iseemfunpodcast. I put a picture for every episode up in the description there and all the different ways to listen and all our different advertisers. And that's where you can write in the comments. Like, you guys can talk to each other and talk to me. I always check the Facebook. So there you go. This episode is sponsored today by Adore Me Lingerie, RX Bar, and Talkspace. Oh, boy. More about all those great sponsors later. What in the ding-dong hell am I going to talk about? I've got so much to talk about. So I just got back from London. And I got to tell you, had a great time. In the middle of my trip, I found out at midnight, because of the time difference, that my pilot, the Mighty Quinn, is not to be picked up. It is now dead. I loved it. I thought it was fantastic. I'm going to say, here's what the deal is. The networks every year, I think I've said this, they hear like 500 pitches. Then they buy 50. Then like 30 scripts even get read, 30 scripts get read by the highest up people. So mine made it all the way up. There's three levels of ladies at ABC it's got to get through. Got to the top lady. But then the ultimate decisions are made with Disney's Bob Iger. So I don't know. Maybe he killed it. Maybe he didn't. I don't know. They don't tell you why. A lot of times it can do with, oh, it doesn't fit in with our programming. We have too many shows about that. Or we don't do shows about that. I don't know. The reasons never matter to me because I never believe anyone anyway, right? This is show business, not show truth bombs. Now, I'm not just saying this to be positive. This is the business side of things. Most people who write pilots do that for a living. It pays quite well to write a pilot. And as you keep getting more experience in it, your quote gets higher. So you can do pretty well with this shit. A lot of people you never heard of, they have a nice life. But I, as the performer, would like to be in something that I write. So we keep on keeping on. I can't tell you how many. I pitched a show. I was deep in it with Netflix, deep in it for a late night idea. I'd had three meetings there. It's like, we love you. We need this idea. You're going to film. It's going to be like a talk show, but it's going to be like filmed out. Like, there's going to be no set. like, some of it's at your house, and then you're going to go here. And I was like, oh my God, amazing. And we filmed a little sizzle, and then it just didn't go anywhere. And then they pick up Joel McHale's basically The Soup. I'm not saying that's bad. He's a proven hit show kind of guy. Why would you not give money to someone who makes money? It's just not exactly what they said they were looking for. You know what I'm saying? You guys have no idea how often I pitch shows. When people write me, you should have your own show, I want to scream into the Twitter. I pitch and produce and like 3 to 4 a year on average. Some years it averages out to 1, some years it's 5. They do not want to put the Jen Kirkman on TV. I don't know why. I'm gorgeous. I'm looking young. Not that that matters. And I'm funny. Listen, if someone else isn't going to compliment me, I'll compliment myself. I got a weird look sometimes on camera when I act. And I'm a delight. And I'm a hard worker. And I'm easy to work with. So fuck you, everybody. Now, can I repurpose this script and try to pitch it to all the other places? Yes, and that's, of course, what we're doing. So more work for me. This time unpaid. Now, the deal was I go back to The Marvelous Mrs. Maisel as a writer if the pilot doesn't get picked up. So now I begin work tomorrow. And I'll be moving temporarily to New York in a few days. So we're writing in Los Angeles for a couple of days this week. Then we're in New York. So I got an Airbnb. I always get nervous. I liked this little place that I got. The girl seems a little intense. I mean, she doesn't live there. She's just renting it to me, but I'm afraid of her already. I'd made a mistake and accidentally hit cancel. It was like 3 in the morning. I'm jet lagged. I'm in London. I'm trying to do this super quick. I hit cancel by accident. I thought I was canceling the request for a different place. I ended up canceling what I'd already paid. It's no big deal. I just hit it again. I just contact her and go, shit, I hit a button. Boom, boom, boom. 3 messages right away. I have a strict cancellation policy. You'll be charged half. Even if I did mean to cancel, it's like, yeah, I knew that. And it only been 24 hours. So it's like, calm down. She's like, I already booked somewhere for myself. I'm like, oh my God, dude, I'm not canceling. I hit a button by mistake. Well, now I know how to refund you. But I'm like, I'm fine over here. Just figure it out in your own time. We good. Jesus. But then I'm home for a month. So then I have to find a different place to live the next time I'm back. And I've found a different neighborhood I want to live in. I know this all sounds fun to you, but I'm going to be fucking 44 this year. You know, I had a breakup last year. I haven't been dating. I'm still single, 14 months into the singledom. And now it's getting frustrating. I don't want to be with anyone. Don't you dare email me that you're interested. None of you people. What I'm saying, though, is just in general, my life feels very unsettled. Now, this is the life I signed up for. I think I would lose my mind if I did the same thing every day. But can there be something in the middle where I have a little bit of control over the randomness of my life? And I guess the answer is sometimes I can and sometimes I can't. When I tour for a living, that is the ultimate control. I pick where I'm going. I pick where I'm playing. I do not pick how many people come, and that can be hard. And so, but I just wanted to stay home this year. I love my apartment. I had it like decluttered. Not that it was cluttered, but it's amazing how even if you think you're organized and you declutter, you're like, where did this shit come from that I am giving away? So I don't know. I'm just like, when I wanted to be home. Now here's the problem. I don't like writing jobs in Los Angeles. I don't like going from the car to the condo to the car to the set to the car to the condo. It's a depressing life. You might as well live in the middle of nowhere. Speaking of which, I saw My Own Private Idaho on the plane. I don't ever think I'd seen the whole thing because I think when it was out, I was in college and I didn't really go to movies. It wasn't my thing. I think I saw Dazed and Confused 6 times in the theater and that was it when I was in college. I liked to, I don't know, it's like if I can't smoke in there and chat with my friends and have coffee, like if a minute goes by when I'm not doing that, I don't want to do it. That movie, that's lost on me. And now I'm just too old to just not see the sadness. And oh, I bet everyone's on heroin during that film. And of course they were. And now we're dead. Not we're, but people are dead. And there's, you know, I'm not like, oh, wow, Flea. Like, it just, it doesn't, it's not, it's for another time. It's a very 90s film and I appreciate it. God, did I love River Phoenix. Oh my God. I had such a crush on him, which is weird that I didn't go see the movie. I might have. I mean, some of it looked familiar, but maybe I've just seen it on tape before. I just don't feel, maybe I saw it on tape then. Would it have come out a year later on VHS, DVD? Maybe I did see it back then. I just don't think I went to the movies. God, I loved him. I was so dumb when he died. It's like, but he's a vegan. Honey, he's an addict. Oh, I didn't know you could both be vegan and an addict. I really didn't. A dumb idiot I am. God, I loved him so much. Everybody I love is dead. Anyway, so, gotta go to New York. Then, I'm in New York May through August. The weeks have not been defined yet, so I could be there a week, could be home a week. So needless to say, my tour for this year is probably not really gonna, I don't know. I'm going to hit some Midwest secondary markets, you know, like, don't put this in stone. I'm just riffing here, like your Omaha cities, your Iowa cities, your Champaign, Illinois, your Kansas City. I don't know. These Omaha, Nebraska, I mean, not Omaha City. These are places I've been a million times before. I love them. They're on my mind. I'm Madison. I'm just not sure. It all depends on what I feel like doing. I also have an opportunity to film a pilot in London. And then also I might try to, that show I wrote for ABC, I might try to do it in London. They want me back again to perform. It went so well. I don't know what I'm doing. Then I might, if I have to go back to London, then it looks like I'm doing a little European tour, which I screamed and yelled at everyone the other night on my Instagram stories that no, I cannot do one this year. See, again, I literally don't know my life. So don't ask. I don't know either. I know it all sounds exciting, but people, well, maybe it is. Maybe it is. What else is life about if not something like this? I just wish I felt a little more settled. But as a meditator, can't I get that from within? Yeah, I fucking guess I can. My Postmates are coming soon, people. I haven't eaten in 24 hours. That is the kind of jet lag I get. Oh my God, here's conversations I don't want to have anymore. I don't want to talk about the weather. And I don't want to talk about what my symptoms of jet lag are. That's all anyone talked to me about in London. People, I'm way more dynamic than that. Then we did get into, I was on a BBC show. Like a highly respected show. And the woman who hosted it was so incredibly wonderful. And she let me stay later to do the podcast part. And I forget if this part was on air. But she said to me, oh, come on. Do you really think Russia had anything to do with the U.S. election? Do you think Russia's that clever? What? It's not an opinion. They meddled in the fucking election. It was very clever. It was very clever. The left ate itself alive. People voted for Jill Stein or just didn't vote because they were so excited about Bernie. And Bernie didn't concede when he should have. And there was hatred towards Hillary and a sense that they're both the same. And whataboutism? And all those are Kremlin tactics. I'm not saying Bernie's involved with the Kremlin, but I'm just saying all of that. And then the Facebook stuff and then the Twitter bots and the trolls. I remember every day waking up and there'd be a new hashtag about Hillary. And I was like, my God, how many people hate her? And now you realize it was pushed by the Kremlin. And then people read it and they start getting doubtful. And then they're, and the voter suppression, which is our own racist issue. And then this, and then, oh, yes, it's not an opinion. The Robert Mueller's on the case is people flipping Gates, Flynn, they pled guilty, people. It's not an opinion. It's a fact. And yes, Russia is that clever. That is what Russia is. I can't believe people are asking. This is a news person. Hi. But the conversations I hated were, oh, sorry about the weather. I'm from the East Coast. I don't mind the weather. Oh, I wish I were in LA, though. You might not. You pasty fucks think you want to live in LA? Let me tell you something. It's lit. We used to have seasons. Why are you making me say this again? I'm jet lagged. I'm cranky. We used to have seasons. When I moved here, I didn't have a winter coat because I thought I didn't need one because I was once like you, a naive rube who thought I was moving to the tropics. Because I watched Beverly Hills 90210 and then did an exterior shot of the Beverly Hills sign and then an exterior shot of the beach. If you don't know how far away those two things from each other are, you don't know. 12 miles away. In traffic, you're looking at an hour. Anyway, it's not a tropical climate. It's not the southern hemisphere. It's not Australia. It's not whatever's tropical. So when I first moved here, January 2002, I could not believe that there was frost overnight on the ground. It looked like it had snowed. I was freezing. It was 35 degrees. Freezing in my little windbreaker or whatever I packed. Like, what? I'd buy a coat. It was always chilly. There was like a look everyone used to have. We used to all wear like kind of beanie winter hats, but like, you know, maybe a light jean jacket and a shirt, because it was a chill in the air. In the fall, it would get cold, like in the 40s. I know you don't think this is cold, but again, this is desert climate, okay? This is not where weirdly the humidity in New York and Boston can feel warmer than 40 when it's 40. And then in the winter, 40s, 30s at night. Then we'd have rain season from January to March, like monsoon, like mudslides, like I'm going to die, like my car is becoming a boat. Then April, May starts to get a little, feels like the East Coast, like 60s. Then June, we have a thing called June gloom. We would forget it every year. We'd be like, yay, summer. And then it would be like, oh, it's foggy every day like San Francisco. It might be warm, but you don't see the sun for a month. Then July is when summer really starts. July, August, September is when you get in your 80s, 90s every day. And then in the hundreds during a heat wave. You know, a heat wave usually is, 3 to 5 to 7 days? You might have another one a week and a half later, but a heat wave comes and goes. In October, we're starting to go back down to the 60s. And then it'd be a day or two, it would be a crazy heat wave for no reason. It'd be like 100 degrees. One of those things where you're like, it's October, so I know the weather. I don't have to check it. And you go outside, it's 100, and you're like, oh my God, I'm melting. Now, every day is 85. And we don't have heat waves anymore. The heat waves are 115 degrees. And most of the time in the summer, it's just 100 degrees every day. It's 100 degrees 6 months out of the year. You think you want that, but you're not a surfer. You're not in the water. You're living nowhere near the ocean in whatever industry you're in, especially show business. And you're in a building where the air conditioning is freezing. People are getting the flu all the time in LA. Then you go outside and it's physically so hot, like sometimes you can't be outside. So you actually can't even be in the weather unless you drive to the beach, which you don't have time to do. It's oppressive heat. You can't go hiking in it. You can't do this. You can't do that. It's the same way. I know it feels differently, but it's the same way as when it's oppressively cold where you are and you can't leave the house. I'm telling you, you don't fucking believe me. Why would I lie? It has changed. I've seen the weather do drastic shit in the 15 years since I've lived here, 16 now, and we don't have seasons anymore. And it's a drag, and it feels depressing, and it feels weird, and it sucks to be inside air conditioning all the time. And when you're outside, again, running your errands or running from meeting to meeting, audition to audition, you're sweating. It's disgusting out. Nobody likes it. Nobody likes it. We like the nice, mild weather that we now have for 6 weeks out of the year, not consecutive. And who knows when those weeks are going to pop up. Oh, hang on 1 second.
Hi, thanks so much. Appreciate it. You too, thanks.
Oh my God, I got to get this podcast done, but I got to eat my vegan gluten-free pizza back in LA. Folks, just don't fuck with me here. I guess it's just the conversation I hate. Where they're like, oh, you live in LA. I'm jealous of the weather. I'm like, yeah, you get sick of it after a while. No, you don't. I wouldn't. Don't say dumb shit like that. You have no idea what you would. But let me put it this way. I know, eating on a podcast is so gross. Let me put it this way. I requested gigs on the East Coast in the winter, because now when I vacation, you know, a vacation, you want a little something different than you're doing all the time. To me, a vacation is like cozying up to a fire, having a hot toddy and wearing a jacket, you know, because I don't get to do that ever. I don't want to go to another pool or a beach for a vacation. Seriously, like 4 years ago, I lost my fucking mind. I was like, that's it. No more pools, no more beach. So again, I just live in a heat climate and I'm nowhere near anything refreshing. So that's all I'm saying. So anyway, if I lived on the East Coast, I think my appreciation for the beach would come back. I love the beach on a cold day and you hear the sea and all that, but the beach where you're living in New York, it's miserable and you're like, all right, this is getting ridiculous. And then you book a trip to Tulum and you're like, oh my God, 8 days. That's me playing steel drums. So I would rather vacation once a year, hardcore beach style, where I get to take off all my clothes that I've been wearing in the winter, than the opposite of what I'm doing now. So yeah, in a way I'm grateful going back to New York, but I just get scared. What if I see a bug or a mice? I don't like it. I sit in fear. I walk around, bring food in the house. I'm always on guard. But I feel like I owned my own $10 million condo in the Soho area or something. Then we didn't have that. I wouldn't have that problem. Anyway, who knows my life? It seems very up in the air. I got to get grounded, get back on my spiritual path. I've been really what I call white knuckling life lately. I can't be doing that. So who knows what's going to happen? I had some great meetings over in London. I might do this pilot for this political show. I might try to sell my show there. Who knows? I remember that psychic. Remember the episodes from years ago, Bill? He was in New Orleans. He goes, you're going to live in London. I go, I don't want to live in London. He goes, well, then don't. You have free will. You don't have to do what I say. I'm just telling you what your palm says. he also predicted that I would meet my Australian ex. Well, he said some vague thing about something in a hotel lobby, you meet someone, but it was true. It came true. And then he did say, don't go out with anyone you've already gone out with before. No, no, no. And I didn't listen. I went and got back out with my ex. So, you know, maybe old Bill is right. I would totally live in London. Although living there is expansive and I don't know where I would live. Don't email me suggestions because I'm not really moving to London. But if I did, you guys would have to change a few things. I hate all the beer drinking. It's gross, you guys. Beer's gross. You guys get all puffy. You guys drink too much. Speaking of which, I did get drunk one night. At a kind of business meeting. So that's kind of how my life looks. Like my pilot doesn't get picked up. You know, I've got great friends. I can text about it. It's like midnight London time. You know, I've got 10 chains going. Everyone's nice to me. But I can't like go, but I'm in London. You know, I can't be like, say to my best friends here, let's go have a drink because they're not here. But then the next night I had like a businessy meeting with some network people and some comedy producers. And we all went out and had a time and had bottles of wine. It turns out they're awesome people that I would totally hang out with. And I drowned my sorrows with them. So it's like, sometimes that's what my life looks like. It's like randos pop up. You get what you need. What was I going to say? But yeah, so many people talking to me about the weather wanted to explode my brain. And then a lot of people asking about, we already talked about that, Russia. What other dumb conversations did I have? I can't remember. I gotta go eat some of this. Hang on. I'll be back in a minute. I'll be back. You wouldn't even know because it's going to be edited together like silk. But I'll be right back. Just had to eat a little something. Oh, that's what I was talking about. Appetite. So when I go overseas, you know, London's 8 hours ahead of LA, and you're on a plane, they feed you a lot, and you get off, and I just feel kind of full. And then, like, I have a whole day ahead of me, but it's really nighttime where I am, so I'm also not hungry. And then I realize, like, oh, it's been, like, 16 hours I haven't eaten anything. And so I just let it balance out, and I start eating when I'm hungry. And it's always at weird times. And if I force it, I get, like, a stomach ache, and it doesn't feel good. So I'm like, whatever. You know, like, I always had a power bar in my bag and all that stuff. And but, yeah, people were like, how's your jet lag? I'm like, well, you know, you make yourself go to sleep, take a pill or something. The night that you get in, you stay up, you get off the plane, and you stay up. Even though you only slept like 4 or 5 hours on the plane, that you stay up, you do your normal life, and you go to bed that night, so you're nice and tired. And then you sleep, you know, maybe a little more than 8 hours, you get up in the morning. You feel a little weird. Have some coffee, have some tea, add a lot of tea. You're on your way. People are like, but aren't you jet-lagged? I'm like, well, I mostly notice it in my appetite. They're like, really? That's weird. No, it's not. I hate when people who don't travel tell me what's weird. You know? No shit. I'm not really this cranky. I'm just annoyed. Stayed in a beautiful hotel that's all like feng shui. Here's the irony. It was called the Sanderson on Berners Street. So every day I had Bernie Sanders on the brain. God damn it. I see that name everywhere. But the hotel's like, they've got like a power food menu. Like, I want a green this and a green that and a healthy this. And they've got like a spa. I didn't go to the spa. I thought I was going to, but I never did. And then the rooms are like feng shui. Like the beds are kind of like in the middle of the room. It's really cool. And yeah, and they have a beautiful bar area. It's called the Long Bar. And there's this like beautiful hanging greenery above it. It's just so tranquil and nice. And a couple of nights after my show, like my show would be done at 9:30, still have that like adrenaline, and I'd get back to the hotel by 10, and I'd like have a glass of wine and wind down and like retweet compliments and like kind of do the promo that I needed for the next night's show. And it was just so nice to get my Malbec going. And then by Wednesday, it's like, well, it's almost the weekend. Here we go. Just that music starts because it's a Wednesday. So Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, I didn't go sit at the bar. Because of that fucking music. And it's like, why? Why does that enhance anybody's experience? There's all different kinds of people from all over the world sitting at the bar, and I'm sure local people come too. Did anyone say we like that music? We don't need music. We're talking to each other. It doesn't create any atmosphere except vile, mediocre. We put no thought. I mean, for a hotel that puts so much thought into everything, the music is completely thoughtless. Like, I don't understand I'm hopeless. Every place now is unz unz. I got to go to the Soho House one night, and it's like a private club, and they don't have that kind of music, but we need to buy memberships to places. I gotta go to the moon if I don't want to hear that music anymore. It's awful. And I know it's not an age thing either. Like, I don't know anyone, any age who likes that music, unless they're like, oh, like I'm an EDM person. I go to the shows, but do you really want to sit in a bar and hear that? Like, it's just so loud. Like, you're already dehydrating yourself with drinking. We don't have to be yelling at the top of our lungs. I don't know. I think I'm just a bore. A bore. I still get excited about stupid things. The Houston stop. Morrissey talks about that in a song. I know he's said horrible things lately. He's always been saying horrible things. He's sort of my free pass. I turn a blind eye. I'm just like, I don't care. I like the music I've always loved. It's not like, no. I literally, like, don't come after me. I don't care. People. People are people. Oh, you can tell I missed my therapy this week because I'm a crank face. That's all right. Listen, I did a lot this week. I went through a lot. My show didn't get picked up. I'm jet lagged. Moving to New York in 4 days. I mean, it's most people would be a little agita. But if you find that you're like that all the time, you're like, what the hell is going on with me lately? I'm just not feeling it. Why don't you go to therapy? Listen, I'm telling you, if you're the person at brunch that always has, quote, funny stories about their crazy life, you need therapy. Remember that episode of Sex and the City where they're like, Carrie, you have to go to therapy. That's you. You're like, I don't have the money. I don't have insurance. I don't have the time. Well, no more excuses. My favorite sponsor, Talkspace, they have solved all that for you. They are an online therapy company for as little as $32 a week. You can have a session with an experienced, licensed therapist that you relate to and feel comfortable with. You get to pick the therapist. Each therapist has at least a master's degree. They've completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. There are over 1,500 licensed therapists to check out on there. And again, you do your therapy over text, audio, or video message. You can even do a live video chat. Again, they're fully licensed. So to get $30 off of your first month and to show your support for this podcast, use code Jen when you go to Talkspace.com/Jen. That's one N in Jen, J-E-N. And again, coupon code Jen for $30 off your first month. The online therapy company that makes it easy to connect with an experienced, licensed therapist. It is therapy for how we live today. Talkspace.com/Jen. Oh, and I've got my silkies that I got from Adore Me, which is a great, listen, folks. Justin Timberlake's not bringing sexy back. He tried to bring a Prince hologram to the Grammys, and it was Prince, what was that quote that Prince said? I tweeted it. What did Prince say about this? Prince warned Justin Timberlake. Prince told us all. Prince said, we're moving into a feminine energy. Get used to it. He was right. And did I delete it? Because I was trying to be... Let's see. Oh, no. Prince had said, quote, on holograms, if I was meant to jam with Duke Ellington, we would have lived in the same age. That whole virtual reality thing, it really is demonic. And I am not a demon, Prince. You're an angel, sweetie. God, I miss him and David Bowie. God, they're beautiful. Oh, why don't all of you look like them? You're all a disappointment. But anyway, Justin Simberlake is not bringing sexy back or holograms back. They put Sheila E. talked to him, and I would have loved to see that conversation. I think she's just like, we're not doing that. But you could bring your own sexy back, especially this Valentine's Day. You don't even have to be with someone. Be sexy for you. Treat yourself to Adore Me lingerie. You will feel so confident and comfortable, you won't want to take it off, which could be a problem, I guess, if you're with someone and they're like, no, you have to take it off. Or you have to go to work and you're like, I'm not taking it off. Well, put your clothes on over it at least. At adoreme.com, you get designer bras and lingerie that will fit you perfectly. So this isn't just a Valentine's Day thing. I mean, this is a life thing. Adore Me, it's designed by women for women of every body type, from petite to plus. So you don't have to go to the mall. You don't have to pay tons of money. You're going to get gorgeous lingerie, bras, and panty sets right to your door. Visit adoreme.com. There are hundreds of styles, from lacy romantic to trendy bralettes to supportive full coverage bras. So find out for yourself why they've sold over 1 million bras and been featured in Vogue, Glamour, Cosmo, Elle, and more. And there's no risk. Shipping and exchanges are always free. So for a limited time, it is the Adore Me Valentine's Day sale. Again, their sale is because of Valentine's Day, but you can shop here anytime. But get your first set for just $19.95 at adoreme.com/fun. Now, this is a limited offer. The sale is not forever, but I'm saying Adore Me is the type of site. Now it's in your life. You can go there all the time and get your bras. Again, adoreme.com/fun. Get your first set for just $19.95. That is going to be 60% off of your first set with a VIP membership at adoreme.com/fun. adoreme.com/fun. And yes, so I was just talking. I was walking around London with my power bars because I never knew when the hunger would strike. And there isn't a lot of time to sit down and go to restaurants. I was doing like 5 hours of press a day. And of course, getting every restaurant recommendation under the sun. I'm like, I'm at work during dinner. So I'm glad I had my RX bars. I brought them with me. RX bar is a whole food protein bar. What does that mean? It means the bars are made with 100% whole ingredients. The company wants to be transparent and upfront with the customers. That's why they label the core ingredients, which are egg whites, dates, and nuts, on the front of the package, and the ingredients that make up the texture and the taste on the back, like 100% real cacao, coconut. Cacao! You know I'm always going to do that. So they actually taste delicious, and I vouch for it because I have every flavor and I eat them all the time. They don't need the fillers, they don't need the additives, and they don't need the chemicals or the added sugar. And I'm telling you guys, these fill you up. You lose some weight, okay? So in 2013, the company decided we are going to call BS on protein bars. They couldn't find a bar that wasn't full of artificial ingredients, fillers, preservatives, and just general BS. So they set out to create a bar with a few simple, clean ingredients. Now, it's simply like you are eating 3 egg whites, 2 dates, and 6 almonds. But are you going to carry 3 egg whites in your purse? You could carry the RX bar. You can actually taste the real fruit, the spices like sea salt. Whether you like sweet or savory, chocolate or fruit, there is an RX bar for you. They come in 11 delicious flavor varieties, and they're gluten, soy, and dairy free. No added sugar. Take them, eat them for breakfast. Take them in your bag for when you're running around. Eat before, you know, before you work out, after you work out. Throw it in your gym bag for bikes and hikes. Again, go to rxbar.com/iseemfun. That's rxbar.com/iseemfun to get 25% off of your first order. And don't forget, egg white protein stands out as a source of protein that is easy for the body to absorb. Again, 25% off your first order, rxbar.com/iseemfun. Be like me, people. Boy, was I just a little bitchy Lou today. Oh, you know what I wanted to talk about? I found this so fascinating because, you know, there was one day where I slept like 12 hours and I was like, I mean, mine was jet lag and such, but I don't really have trouble sleeping. Lately, I've been doing a thing where I'll start to nod off and like go to sleep and like you start dropping your book or your phone or whatever's in your hand. Like I wake back up for a second and then my mind just goes, you're going to die someday. I wonder what that's going to feel like. I hope it's not a death where you just feel like you can't breathe and it's really bumming you out and you're scared. I'm like, well, Jen, why is my mind doing that? And then I fall asleep. Then that lulls me to sleep. But I was reading an article about a sleep disorder that makes someone nocturnal, and it is not insomnia. So I thought I'd read that to you. Let me see if we have, do we have any listener emails? Oh my God. Thank you to, there's an I Seem Funner that came out. I forget his name. He stopped me in the street. You did mention you didn't like my second book as much as my first. Information I did not need, but you were very sweet. Issy, I think is her name. Issy. I know you've seen me in London and Manchester. Thank you for coming. People came in from Belgium. I loved my shows at the Soho Theater. They were almost all sold out. 179 seat theater. And more people came to see me in London than in any other city in America. So thank you, London, for being so good to me. And I felt like this show is the most like loosey-goosey, like, I don't know, it's not even a year old. And this seemed to be the one that everybody liked. So the message is don't work hard. It was funny, the guy that panned me last year, Brian Logan, he tried to come and I told the publicity people, do not let him get a free press ticket. So he was denied one. And he could have come and paid to review me and give me another shitty review, but he didn't. And I got a nice review from the Standard Evening UK. Or the Evening Standard. I'm not going to get it in order. I'm an American. And it was great. So I thank you all. I had the best time. I just felt, there's nothing better than like not having to deal with like, just like get on stage. Oh, by the way, my show's in Buffalo because I'm going back to work. I cannot do the Thursday night show. I have to work Thursday. I can only get Friday off. So there's only 4 shows in Buffalo now, not 5. If you had tickets to the Thursday, I'm sure the club has already contacted you for your refund. I hope you will come to either the Friday or Saturday shows. And then I am moving my Vermont Comedy Club dates, again, due to work. And Bloomington, Indiana is up in the air. So I apologize. But again, now you know how JK feels. All right. Anyway, you were all amazing, and I thank you for being in London with me. Oh, my God. Someone needs advice about having kids. Okay. I'm an old millennial and often quite despairing of my generation. Nevertheless, you've made me aware of a tendency I share to sometimes think that by my age we get everything or that we've been around long enough to know about everything. No, lose that thought train. You're not much older than me, but I've listened carefully to the experience and knowledge those extra years have given you, and you've helped me to learn to listen to other older people in this way too. Oh yeah, listen to older people. We know what we're talking about. That's the one thing I would say about the millennial generation. Like, you're definitely going to change things the way we can't, but there's nothing like good old-fashioned just having been alive a long time that, like, literally life experience does not change. Technology does, you know, styles do, but just how it feels to be older and how your brain develops as you get older, like, just trust an older person. Talk to older people. Take care of us when we're older. Give us our meds. Okay, now for an advice question. It's about having kids. I hope I don't need to state the obvious to any listeners that just because you personally don't want kids, you are still a human being with insightful thoughts on the topic. I'm really not. I'm really, as Hugh Grant said in About a Boy, oh no, I'm really that shallow. When they were like, do you want to be our daughter's godfather? He's like, no. And they're like, well, we thought you had something inside of you. He's like, no. Why am I? Okay, by the way, I was avoiding seeing Paddington because I'm like, yeah, I want to look at Hugh Grant. I don't want to listen to his voice. I thought it was all animated. I didn't know he was actually in it. And I know he's looking older. I just still think he's so charming. I can't. What is it? I can't deal with how much I have a crush on him. He's just my boyfriend right now. Am I dating? I'm dating Hugh Grant. All ages. I forgive him for the prostitute. He was young. He was in Hollywood. Okay. I'm 33, single, and I know I want kids. I haven't been in a relationship in 3 years, and when I'm being honest with myself, I don't see myself being with someone in the near future. I know I have some issues around intimacy, but mostly I just love being alone. I have zero desire to go on dates, and I doubt I will find a guy right now who is sufficiently emotionally intelligent, enough of a feminist, and generally just not an inconvenience. See, I know what you're saying, lady, if you're a lady. I think you're a lady. Oh, yeah, she is. I'm seriously considering using a sperm donor, and I'd like to hear your thoughts. I've obviously talked to my therapist, friends, and sister, but I really respect your insight on things. Some people have told me to wait until I'm older, but it's basically them saying, you're a nice, pretty girl, you'll find a boyfriend, and then you can make babies, and it drives me crazy. I don't see why something I truly want should be dependent on some theoretical guy. But what do you know, but what do you think about waiting a bit in terms of maturity and experience? Any notes to share? Well, okay. I personally don't understand bringing a child into this world. I literally think the environment will not give them a good life and they will not live till middle age. But if you insist on not adopting, then I guess these are my thoughts. I have very extreme views about not bringing children into the world, which is not popular. And I have friends that are having kids and it's like, I just shut up about it because it's not my business. I knew someone who, like you, had been dating. Well, I don't know if you've been dating, but she'd been dating. And she couldn't find someone and she wanted a kid and she'd frozen her eggs. She was a little bit older, maybe 36 at the time. And she went for it and she became a single mom. I haven't seen her in years. My question to you is, do you have the money? You know, do you have enough money to raise a kid? Because it's really hard. And you're going to want to be able to pay people to help you take care of the kid, whether it's a nanny or some kind of preschool or something. To me, it's a hugely financial issue first, and maybe that's a weird way to look at things. I totally get it about being with men and maybe just right now, it does seem like a weird time to, in general, for women to go, men, those are our choices. Like, it's just such a negative cloud over men right now. Even if you're not the people that are groping everybody, even your reactions to it, like, it's just, we've been taken down a notch, women have, in terms of, like, our total desire on the whole for men, I think, as straight women. But just know that if you would like to be in a relationship someday, having a child will make that more difficult in terms of the desire to go on dates. Although maybe having a kid will actually, you know, like the way that my friends have kids, like even though they're married, they're like, oh my God, like I want to do grown up things. This, I've been baby talking all day. I've been doing this. I mean, you will have a 24 hour job in addition to your job. I'm not saying that single parents can't do it. It's just an extra burden in life. But if it's what you love and what you really want, then that's, you know, like Seinfeld always says, like, pick your hell. Like, that's your hell. Like, you know, explain to the kid where's the second parent, whether it's mom or dad. You can explain that to them. You can do this. I mean, 33 to me seems like an age that someone should know if they want kids or not. But if you're going to do a sperm donor, I mean, why not, like, just put everything in motion and see how long it actually takes, and then decide. I mean, if you have a donor, you don't have to like do it right that second anyway, right? I don't really know how it works. I'm all for like giving it a year, sleeping on it, and you've talked to therapists and friends and your favorite podcast. Now, even if you're not a spiritual person, you don't believe in a power higher than yourself. I always feel like our inner selves we can check into if before we go to bed, we say, hey, help me to get in touch with me. And I'd love to wake up with more clarity on this. Like literally just do that every night for a while. Because it's a really a soul searching question, you know, and there are complications with it. But again, like you might meet a single dad who wants to blend families. You might meet a guy who's like, oh my God, I totally wanted kids. Cool. You already have one. I didn't even care if it's mine. We'll have our own someday too. We'll adopt one. Like, there are guys out there that might not mind if you already have a kid. If you don't want a relationship, again, there might be, you know, sex is sex to men, whether you have a kid or not. So you might find that you have some affairs and you raise your child and you don't have a romantic partner. I don't know. You know, it is a different world than it used to be. And it is not always easy to meet someone who wants what you want. And that is also something that, like, you know, it takes a while to meet someone. Okay, they want what you want, but now we're together a few years, now we're getting married. You know, years go by while you're deciding if that's the person. And so if you really want a child, you know, for me, it's just, it would be a money thing. It would be like, how secure financially are you? If anything goes wrong, is there a savings? How hard do you have to work? You know, that kind of thing. I think, you know, it sounds like you know what you want, but it sounds like you're a little bit, as anyone would be, on the edge or a little nervous about when to do it. So I think if you want to take it from me, like spiritual hippy dippy dips, if you just kind of give it up to the universe and say, would you let me know when the right time is? And I bet it'll come to you. And it will feel different than a choice because it'll just be like a knowing. And I think that you have plenty of time to experiment with that kind of decision-making. I think, you know, if you have a baby in a year or two, like, it's fine. That's my opinion. All right, let's end on this. Jen Kirkman reads to you. So this is an article, My Life with a Sleep Disorder That Makes Me Nocturnal. I thought this was fascinating. Hang on 1 second. Why is everybody texting me and I don't have your number in my phone? Okay. This is from thecut.com. I love that website. I just subscribe to them on Twitter and I just read what they tweet out. Okay, this is by Ilana Strauss. It's called My Life with a Sleep Disorder That Makes Me Nocturnal. I once interviewed author Michael Lewis on the challenges of being a night owl. Quote, morning people ignore the bigotry at the heart of our culture, Lewis told me. It's like a conspiracy of farmers. I'm handicapped by what farmers used to do. I am too. For as long as I can remember, my body has wanted to sleep during the day and stay up at night, the result of something called delayed sleep phase disorder. DPSD isn't exactly a sickness, it's a circadian rhythm oddity that makes my body clock tick at a weird pace. I fall asleep late and wake up late, kind of like being jet-lagged forever. DSPD isn't a psychological problem like insomnia or a choice like staying up late to binge on Netflix. I sleep fine when I can set my own schedule. My fatigue is less a product of my own body and more of society's expectations for when one ought to be awake. Unusual circadian rhythms may not have been an issue for my far back ancestors. In the past, people like me may have stood guard over my sleeping tribesmen, watching for lions or something. But then humans had to go and invent farming, meaning they had to wake up early to do all those early morning chores. Fast forward a little bit in human history, and schools and workplaces have built their hours around those same early morning wake-up calls. Today, waking up late doesn't just throw you out of whack with everyone else's schedules. It's also seen as a referendum on your character. I'm lazy. I'm bored. Really, I just can't fall asleep. How many hours do you sleep a night? Asked my pediatrician during an annual checkup toward the beginning of high school. 7, I lied. It was more like 4 or 5, but people got mad when I said that. You should be getting more sleep at your age, she snapped. I can't fall asleep. Don't stay up late. I'm not trying to. I just can't sleep. Eventually, she let me go with instructions to try drinking some warm milk before bed. That night, I dutifully microwaved a mug, knowing as I did it that it wouldn't work. None of the sleep hygiene tips ever did. But following them felt almost religious, like staring at illegible Hebrew at bar mitzvahs. As long as I did everything I was supposed to, I could feel less guilty about breaking society's sacred schedule. Warm milk, meditation tapes, breathing exercises, these were my penances. Recently, circadian rhythms have become more of a buzzword. Some scientists just won a Nobel Prize for studying them, and the Sleep Research Society changed its website banner from Advancing Science, Education, and Health in Sleep to Advancing Sleep and Circadian Science last year. But when I was a kid, nobody but sleep specialists and neuroscientists really knew about circadian rhythm disorders. Before computers, I'd fill my sleepless nights with reading. Before I could read, I would sit on my carpeted floor, drawing cartoon pterodactyls on printer paper. The alternative was lying in bed, watching the speckled blue paint on my walls morph ever so slowly into shapes for hours at a time. In college, I read The Yellow Wallpaper, a short story where a woman diagnosed with hysteria is forced to lie in bed for months, staring at her yellow wallpaper. Eventually, she starts hallucinating creeping women in the paper. I wanted to explain to the class that when you spend enough time staring at a wall, the universe stops looking solid. Its pieces move around like algae on a pond. As the sky began to change from black to periwinkle each morning, I'd finally fall asleep. A few hours later, my alarm would go off. Since alarm clocks were often ineffective, my mom and I tried various different techniques to get me up. For a few days, I asked her to splash cold water on my face. She'd open the door slowly, creep up to my bed, and stand above me with a plastic bowl of water for a few minutes, then tepidly drip a few drops on my face. She could never bring herself to really pour it. But it didn't matter because by that point, I was already awake, my sixth sense screaming that someone was watching me while I slept. I used to fantasize about teaming up with all the other night owls in Chicago to build our own town. We'd have schools, offices, movie theaters, and restaurants that all operated at night. Instead of 9-to-5 jobs, we'd have 5-to-1s, that's PM to AM. I'd wake up comfortably every afternoon and leisurely fry up some eggs before strolling to school. The homeroom bell would ring just before sunset. Around midnight, we'd all head home for dinner. Insomniacs could come too, provided they didn't insist we try out their therapist or do breathing exercises. But the dream never came to fruition, and I had to live with questions like, what's wrong with your eyes? Are you sick? People always pointed out my under-eye circles. As a kid, I'd meander through cosmetic racks at Walgreens, waiting for the day I'd have my own money to buy under-eye concealer. Once I started babysitting, I began collecting all the tan-colored goops trafficked by Maybelline and Neutrogena, double-duty under-eye wands, secret camouflage sticks, and Ultra HD concealer creams, promising me all the delicate beauty of artillery. This was in the days before YouTube makeup tutorials, so I didn't really understand how to apply any of it. I went through middle school with eyes surrounded by what looked like dry clay. Whenever a classmate asked me how I was, I'd respond tired. Usually they'd nod knowingly. Up to 16% of teenagers develop temporary DSPD. I had the lifelong kind, so not to brag, I was a pro. Though I wasn't a particularly relaxed, live-and-let-live kind of kid, I did my best to cultivate a chill personality, which I figured was the only way to be chronically fatigued without being too much of a drag. I generally stay awake through my classes, but toward the end of the school day, my limited supply of energy was almost completely exhausted. I'd sit in Spanish class staring at conjugations and planning. When the bell rings, I'll stand up. Then I'll walk to my locker through the parking lot and go home. The plan always seemed iffy. The whiteboard was already disappearing into a colorful fog, and I could feel my eyelids shutting against my orders. I'll get home, I assured myself, right, please? Then the bell would ring and my Pavlovian response would kick in. Like watching a movie, I'd see myself stand up and walk away. I thought about ditching early classes, but teachers made us watch scared straight videos where teens accused of truancy, literally just not going to school, were told that they'd go to prison if they kept it up. It was my understanding that if you missed enough school, you were automatically sent to juvenile detention. That alone didn't scare me so much, but I'd also heard that you had to wake up at 5 a.m., which I knew I couldn't do. I'd already given up clarinet for the same reason. When I was 14, my mom took me to a sleep lab. I sat still as a giant orderly glued electrodes to my face. In school, I'd learned about the observer effect, a scientific axiom that says that measuring something changes it. It was supposed to explain electrons, but as I lay in the sleep lab bed that night, covered in uncomfortable glue and wires, I wondered if it might apply to sleep studies too. Does covering someone in itchy wires to measure their brain activity change their brain activity? Then I wondered if all MRI studies were flawed. Perhaps all science was bullshit. My mom and I returned a few days later to get my results. The psychiatrist's office was filled with framed certificates, and the psychiatrist reminded me of Freud. Older, bearded, eyes that dug uncomfortably into mine. "You have a circadian rhythm disorder," he told me. I had no idea what that meant. He didn't elaborate. "Okay," I said. "How do I fix that?" "You don't," he told me. "There's no cure." "Okay." Lots of teenagers have it. You're biologically designed to stay up later at your age. There's nothing technically wrong with you. The problem is you have to go to school. "Right. I can give you drugs," he suggested. "What do you want, something to wake you up during the day or help you sleep at night?" I thought about it. Staring at the walls all night was something I learned to live with, but being exhausted at school could affect my future. I chose the wake-up pills. "By the way, I can tell that you're depressed because you blink slowly," he said. "I wrote a book on it." He pulled a book from its family of identical books on his shelf, which now resembled a smile with a missing tooth. The title was something about reading disorders on the face. I could tell he wanted me to ask for a copy, but that would feel like admitting I was depressed, which, like plenty of people subsisting on a few hours of sleep a night, I was. For the next week, I took one of his prescribed wake-up pills every morning. They did nothing. Despite getting what turned out to be an accurate diagnosis, I still didn't really understand what was wrong. My mom didn't like the psychiatrist, so we never went back. In college, I took another shot at finding a cure and went to a doctor who prescribed me Ambien. The pills didn't make me sleepy, but they did make me sleep, sometimes. I'd take one and feel my brain begin to slowly shut down, functions turning off one by one until eventually I was unconscious. Other times, though, they didn't do anything at all. I'd beg my boyfriend to join me on midnight walks around campus where I'd see faces and bricks and cry for no reason. Once I dreamed that I'd made a weird digital painting involving swirling colors and eyeballs. When I woke up the next day and opened my computer, I found it saved on Photoshop. I ran out of pills after a couple months and made an appointment to get a refill. "She gave you Ambien?" asked the nurse practitioner at my school's health center. "You should not be on that long term." She wouldn't give me any more. I was relieved to hear it. Ambien mornings were brutal. I'd wake up feeling like a donkey kicked me in the forehead. "So what should I do?" I asked. "When people come in for sleep problems, we usually just refer them to mental health," she explained. So a week later, I found myself in a tiny office staring at my new therapist from my spot. "What do you think about when you try to sleep?" she asked me. "School, TV, whatever I'm doing the next day. Do you have a lot of anxious thoughts?" "No." "Huh, I don't know what it is then." "Okay. Do you want to keep coming back to therapy?" "Not really." I didn't go back. After college, I backpacked through Europe with friends. Jet lag was agony. I couldn't sleep for my first 72 hours on the continent. But by the third night, my brain began to fray. I heard sounds that weren't there and saw people moving in the corners of my eyes that would disappear once I turned my head. But jet lag on the way back to the U.S. was paradise. I got off the plane and suddenly I could fall asleep when it got dark and wake up when the sun rose. For the first time in my life, I was normal for about a week until my new schedule and it wore off. Soon after my return, I moved to New York into a tiny bedroom with no windows that my grandmother once described as cave-like. No sunlight meant I was sleeping worse than usual. When I woke up in that bedroom each day, I'd stumble out of bed dizzy and nauseous and hold the wall to keep from falling over. My job was a difficult haze, and my boss would notice my lack of energy and chalk it up to laziness, sometimes sending me page-long emails detailing everything that was wrong with me. It got so bad I took to WebMD. There, I discovered delayed sleep phase disorder. The description fit me so well that I felt like an idiot for not having discovered it before. It was slightly comforting to learn that I was a drop in a whole sea of idiots. Doctors typically misdiagnose DSPD, so most people never learn they have it. I joined a Facebook community of other DSPD sufferers, many of whom couldn't keep a job. Call your doctor to write a note for work, one told me. The law says employers have to accommodate disability, so sometimes they do. I kept a sleep log and brought it to a sleep doctor who confirmed that it sounded like I did indeed have DSPD, and then he could write me the note. But he didn't write it that day. After I called his office a half dozen times over the next couple months, he finally mailed it to me. But my boss demanded a letter directly from his office, and once again, I couldn't get a hold of the doctor. In the meantime, I tried melatonin, dark glasses, sleep therapy lamps, chronotherapy, a torture designed to punish people like me but actually make us sleep less. Some of the treatments temporarily tweaked my schedule, but nothing made a noticeable difference. Eventually, my job put me on, we don't want to deal with officially firing you, but we will make your life suck until you quit duty, so I quit. Then a miracle happened. My sublease ended and I moved into a new apartment. This time I had a massive window facing east. My room was so small that I had no choice but to push my mattress up against the window, meaning an enormous gush of sunlight gradually woke me up every morning. The sun must have reset my body clock somehow because not long after moving in, my disorder disappeared. Suddenly, I could sleep before midnight. I could wake up before my alarm. I could go through the day without feeling like a reanimated zombie. After a few months, my lifetime of sleeplessness felt like a story I used to tell myself. I was on the other side of the looking glass. I effortlessly dropped 15 pounds. A year later, I moved into a new apartment, making sure it had a bedroom window facing east. Unfortunately, a large balcony cast a shadow over my window. As I'd feared, my DSPD came back, and it seemed to have gotten worse. This time, I wasn't just exhausted, I was non-functional. I started getting lost in my own neighborhood. Later that day, I crossed another busy intersection. When I was halfway to the other side, a driver slammed on the brakes a few feet away from me and honked. I was confused. The walk signal was on. But as I stared at it, I realized that the white man looked an awful lot like a red hand. Incidents like this continued, and I began to avoid leaving my apartment unless I had someone with me. I even considered moving to Europe. Thanks to the time difference, I'd be able to work from 2 p.m. to 10 p.m. there, but I'd miss my family. As the seasons changed, light started entering my window from a different angle. It wasn't as good as being cured, but I began to feel a little more normal again. I've come to accept that this is my normal, that sometimes I'll feel like a fully functioning human and sometimes I won't. Well, that sounds miserable, but I was fascinated by DSPD. And I have my own thing where I think I'm meant to sleep 5 hours at a time. I like to go to bed late and get up early, and then I like to nap. So I like to go to bed at like 8 and wake up at midnight and then be awake and then get up again at 5 a.m. I don't know what that is. That's just me. All right, guys. Probably the world's worst episode today. Until next week, have fun.